Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the very first defense show of the year, looking at preseason game one against the Eagles. Joining me for that is Jonas Schaefer. Jonas, how you doing?
Ken, good to be back on with you for football.
Always a pleasure, Jonas. And if you don't know, if you've been in under a rock or something like that, I guess, Jonas used to be the football beat writer for the Baltimore Sun, now works for the Baltimore Banner. What other exploits do you have going on right now, Jonas?
Exploits. It might be overselling it. We have a Banner Ravens podcast that I host with my buddy Paul Mancano. Just, once a week, twice a week, depending on how things shake out. It's about, 30 to 40 minutes. Just your kind of general lay of the land Ravens podcast. Obviously, nowhere near as granular and as detailed as you go, Ken. But, we just kind of shoot the shit and talk what we just saw in Ravens world.
All right. Well, that first preseason game of the year, always kind of a special date on our calendar. We get all excited about going back to football. We got all into our routines about thing. Very hot night at the ballpark. Took some unnecessary rain gear, which was annoying me. I don't get into that story. But the Ravens ran into an Eagles team here who was a lot tougher on their offensive line than the defensive front the Ravens were able to show them. Good game by the secondary. We're going to get into that. But I thought in particular, the Ravens very undermanned on that defensive front. I'm including outside linebackers and defensive line in this group.
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to kind of go big picture just with the Eagles rushing success, Ken, I can go ahead and do that. Obviously there's a statistic called success rate, which basically measures, does a play generate positive EPA for you? And, depending on what site you're looking at, that definition can vary. A successful run is usually about 4 yards on first down. It's, usually on second down, does it get you to within, I think, 70% of the remaining yards to go on third down, do you actually get it? So it's pretty intuitive and I think straightforward in terms of defining what makes a successful play. And if you look at what the Eagles did Friday night, it is it belies what their overall production was, but it kind of makes sense if you actually watch the game, because it didn't feel like the Ravens were really able ever to mount any kind of defense until really late in that game when, when the Eagles got in those big heavy formations and were trying to push the pocket push the ball forward on those third and ones, fourth and ones, and the Ravens were able to have a little bit of success. But I digress. First quarter, 66.7% rushing success rate. Second quarter, 66.7. Third, 54.5. Fourth, 58.3.
Unbelievable.
Overall, 60.5%. And for context, the 49ers were first in the NFL last year in rushing success rate at 46.4%. So that is...
The Ravens were higher than that. The Ravens were at 52.7, I think, for the year last year.
I was just going up. That was just me taking stuff off Drew Media. Maybe, again, like the some of the data is...
Definitional difference.
Right. If you have a scramble, then... that could possibly be working into the rushing success rate. I was just going off with whatever True Media was using to define it. So the 49ers last year, again, according to True Media, were first for the season at 46.4. Eagles finished at 60.5%. And then you look at the Ravens. Obviously, we're not talking about their offense today, but they were 23.8%. Last in the NFL last year was the Bucs at 28.2. So we are talking about two very different ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah. And you know, this the I'd say the Eagles last night looked more like the 2019 Ravens, able to run it with the death of a thousand cuts offense, going for it on fourth down whenever they felt like it and getting it. And the Ravens defense did a good job of holding down breakaway runs. I mean, if the Eagles ran the ball 38 times, they didn't have a single run over 9 yards. The whole game, which is that part is very good. They averaged 3.8 yards per carry. Nothing wrong with that. You'll take that most days. They got 13 first downs. That's completely unacceptable. 13 first downs running the ball will almost always win you a National Football League game, or will correlate in so many ways with what wins the National Football League game, even if it's not a causality effect there. You get a lot of first downs running the ball. You're dominating the game in a lot of ways, usually including on the scoreboard. When you're doing it.
Yeah. And those high leverage spots, it was obviously probably even more one-sided for the Eagles. It was on third and fourth down, 80% success rate through the first three quarters, overall 75%. So in those high leverage spots, they really did a good job of converting. And a lot of that was because they were running from, you know, third and one, third and two, and they didn't really have to move heaven and earth to move the sticks.
Yeah, if we look at why that occurred on the Ravens side, the Ravens are extremely shorthanded in this game. And obviously, you know, they're not going to play their big defensive lineman. Michael Pierce, long injury history. He sits out most of the preseason, and that's how it ought to be. Justin Madubuike, their most important interior lineman in theory, along with Jones. I mean, they're all pretty important, but Madubuike, a very important defensive lineman, obviously. He's going to sit out the whole preseason. Travis Jones, they took a chance with him to play him some snaps early on, but he left early. Urban left early. I'm looking at my sheet of this. I'm looking at the, oh, I'm looking at the wrong side of this.
Brody was the only guy to get over 20 snaps last night.
And he only stayed in into the second quarter, and then he was done. So, and after that, they changed packages even to do what they were doing, because the only outside linebackers they had in the game, we talked defensive linemen, the only outside linebackers they had available after the first two series were Joe Evans and Tavius Robinson. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't even field a regular base defense. They had to use an open nickel, which uses three down linemen and one outside linebacker, using a five tech essentially on the one side, the Ravenel, as the effectively the edge setter on one side. By the way, I thought he played pretty well, but we'll get to that a little bit later. But so shorthanded, it's no way to go into a defensive game. And it's not the way the Ravens typically have had their long streaks of wins. They've had their wins because their threes and the people they can go to, the defensive depth they can bring to bear is much better than the opponents in the second half.
Yeah, I don't think you or I, when we were looking at the list of the undrafted rookies the Ravens were bringing in, had Joe Evans getting 65 snaps in the preseason opener on our bingo card.
Yeah, was it 65? For some reason, I thought it was some number like that.
That might have just been defense. Maybe it was more special teams.
All right, just a really difficult night for a lot of players on that defensive front, and Philadelphia, which has a big offensive line. Now, it's not like most offensive lines aren't big these days, but they have an exceptionally big offensive line at tackle. They have some big guards, and they really leaned on the Ravens in terms of their double teams initially, using duo blocking schemes or combination blocks, whatever you want to call it. They had a lot of that. They had a lot of double teams on the inside, trying to make space in between. Didn't matter, because they tried some zone two and they were effective at that. They got guards on the move regularly. They were effective at that. That first line, that front, they were able to pierce pretty easily. The linebackers did a good job of making some tackles after that and not allowing any of those to turn into really long runs.
Yeah, I think structurally, this was about what you expected from the Ravens. you know, again, from the True Media database, Eagles ran into light boxes on 70.4% of their carries in the first three quarters. You know, the True Media definition is six players in that imaginary box. Obviously, that is a statistic that only tells you so much, because a lot is dependent on, you know, down and distance. It depends on what personnel the offense is lining up in, which of course is matched in kind by the defense. But I thought it was notable that the Eagles had such a high light box rate, because the Ravens had an even higher light box rate, and the Eagles were very efficient running the ball, and the Ravens were not. You know, the Eagles averaged almost 2 yards before contact per carry through those first three quarters. That would have been first in the NFL last year. So they really, as you said, kind of put their thumb on the scales and did a good job of just establishing that line of scrimmage in a way that the Ravens couldn't when they had the ball.
Yeah. All right. Outstanding. Let's move on. One of the things I always look for in the preseason is deployment order. I think it tells you a lot about what the coaches believe the real depth chart is. There's a depth chart produced by the Ravens. It's produced by the PR department under a loose set of guidelines given to them.
Don't get me started on that, Ken.
Yeah, that's all right.
The amount of clicks and engagement that thing gets, despite it being explicitly labeled as produced by the PR staff, is just mind-boggling. Yeah. That is just how obsessed people are for any window into the inner workings of the Ravens football coaching staff, even though it is explicitly not from, you know, the Ravens football offices.
It is explicitly not. It probably comes with some loose instructions. Is look, rookie's got to earn the job. Don't put a rookie as a first string player right off the bat. But but other than that, you know, fill it out as you see fit. And they've often put, you know, a first round rookie down in there at the, you know, third or fourth on the depth chart. I remember Charlie Kolar. Might have even been Mark Andrews was fourth on the depth chart when he first came to the Ravens, but which wouldn't be surprising, because they, you know, drafted Hayden Hurst in the first round. All right. So anyway, let's look at this position by position, because I think this means a lot in terms of what the potential depth chart is right now. At cornerback, they did a little bit of shifting, which confused this situation a little bit, but they started with Wiggins and JAD on the outside. Now, of course, we're not seeing any of Stevens. We're not seeing any Humphrey. No Marcus Williams and no Kyle Hamilton in the secondary. So those four guys sat out the entire game, didn't even play a single snap. So we're starting with Wiggins and JAD, I think, is what I expected. I didn't expect anybody else to be on the outside other than JAD. I'm not sure exactly where JAD falls in the current outside corner depth chart, particularly after that game. But I did not expect anybody but JAD to be at right corner to start the game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can talk about how the cornerback performance and what sounds like Nate Wiggins coming out of that game, you know, in good health or in better health than it feared might mean for his playing time, you know, in possibly week one. But my impression was that the Ravens felt like JAD had a stronger training camp up until Friday's game than Nate Wiggins. I think he has had higher, I don't want to say higher highs, but he hasn't had as many lows as Wiggins in coverage. Yeah. I think he's gone against better competition typically as well. So even though Nate Wiggins was all anyone could talk about for the first 2.5 quarters last night, I think, you know, I don't know. I think JAD still might have the inside track to get that next man up in the outside cornerback spot, however that shakes out. And there's so many variables now with, you know, Marlette and, you know, Ardarius, and none of us really have a sense for just how the slot position is going to shake out with the injuries that are, you know, kind of ransacking this group. But it will be curious if we look back in hindsight and see what it says, and an inflection point in Nate Wiggins getting that nod over JAD, which was perhaps inevitable, but maybe it'll happen a little bit sooner now than later because of what he showed us on Friday night.
There are enormous incentives for it to be true, and big incentives for the 2024 Ravens in particular, because if they can find out what they have in Wiggins, and for that matter in TJ Tampa, who's also a rookie but hasn't, you know, seen camp yet even. So we're really getting ourselves ahead of ourselves on that one. But if they can see what they have in Wiggins, it'll allow them to help make roster decisions for next year. JAD, if he plays the entire year and keeps Nate Wiggins off the field, does nothing for the Ravens in terms of understanding what roster decisions they can make for next year, let alone the fact that obviously they'd prefer that Wiggins outplay JAD because Wiggins is a rookie and they have more team control left, period. It's there's multiple reasons, multiple layers of reasons why if you're Eric DaCosta, you're talking to your next door neighbor across the fence and saying, hey, please put my guy in there because we need to find out what we're drafting next year.
I think that's fair, but you know, it's a long season. I think inevitably we were going to get to a point where Nate Wiggins was going to have to, you know, kind of shit or get off the pot in terms of being playable. I still really like Jalen Armendariz, and again, I really have no clue what the week one snap distributions might be, considering it is the Chiefs, it is all that speed, but it's also the strength and physicality of having to bring down guys like Travis Kelce and Isaiah Pacheco and Rashee Rice, and maybe you trust Jalen Armendariz to do that a little bit more than Nate Wiggins with his slighter profile. So I'm not ready to call this race, if I can borrow some election parlance, but it is a kind of fascinating data point in what still is going to be a battle that looms for the next 3-4+ weeks, right?
Yeah, I guess it's like 26 days still to the opener, right? Till Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're recording this on Saturday night, by the way. Hopefully you're listening on Sunday or Monday. Things may have changed. And one of the things you alluded to early, I wanted to make sure I understood. Was there additional news coming back with regard to Wiggins' injury today that I missed?
Yeah, both Jeff Zeribek and Jameson Hensley both saying that there's no real serious concern from the Ravens staff on that Nate Wiggins injury. I think Jameson just tweeted that he's more sore than anything. So obviously, I don't know where your mind went, Ken, but my mind after seeing, you know, Ardarius's left arm kind of hanging numbly after that tackle in the open field, my mind went to Marlon Humphrey in the Steelers game from 3 or 4 years ago, where just out of nowhere, you know, he popped his pec basically on a completely innocuous looking tackle. And, you know, when I asked him about it a year later, he still didn't really have an explanation for the science of that, of how it happened. And, you know, I think because of what is concerns, because of the concerns that we have about Nate Wiggins and his size and his strength and everything, your mind probably jumps to the worst in terms of like these soft tissue injuries or these muscular injuries, like, oh, of course, you know, he didn't have the musculature to handle this or that. But it seems like the Ravens dodged a bullet, and I don't know how long he'll be out for, or if he'll be out for very long at all, but it seems like that there's no real concern about him potentially missing week one.
I am very happy to hear that. And obviously that's more news than I had at this exact moment. I'm glad to hear that. So what it'll do, I do basically go into a cave when I'm writing and you know, I'm in here literally, other than a few hours to sleep, I've been in here about the last, 30 hours straight, almost just since the end of the game. So I guess it's only 24 hours. I'm exaggerating. And it's a lot of fun. But anyway, let's continue on with the deployment order, because we did start with Pepe getting the start at slot corner. You know, we obviously, Ardarius Washington's been playing primarily safety in camp. It's something that I don't know about you, I kind of expected him to get a little bit of time, still expect him to get a little bit of time at slot corner as this goes on. But there is also, you know, if you want him to have live fire at safety and lean on that versatility value, there is a value to that as well. And you know, we're going to talk about this in the second part of the show, but I thought he played very well last night, which is a really should help give him a big leg up in terms of any kind of slot value, backup safety value. I mean, he gains ground on players like Worley and Pepe in those battles just because of that.
We're talking about Ardarius?
Ardarius now, yes.
Yeah. I was, when they signed Eddie Jackson and then they brought in Darrell Worley, I was like, oh boy, have we gone from Ardarius Washington potentially being a dark horse slot starter to maybe look being on the outside looking in of this roster? Because, you know, someone his size, someone with his injury history, maybe you you know, you trust that Daryl Worley could make a more meaningful contribution to, you know, the however many snaps are in a football game because of his special teams value and because you had at that point so many other promising options inside. But, you know, now I think Ardarius is probably coming off like one of his best weeks as a Raven, you know, like, you know, full stop. I think he's been, you know, I do the training camp battle tracker for the banner. And I feel like it's been, you know, three or four straight days of, you know, the emoji where it's the stock charting up. And I think, you know, as you said, last night was another really promising night for him. You know, he had the breakup in pass coverage against Albert O. You know, he came down from depth, you know, in like a kind of stacked box to stop Will Shipley for a 1 yard, for just a 1 yard gain, which was, you know, as we were talking about earlier, was kind of a miracle in itself. Anytime the Eagles didn't get more than 3 or 4 yards on a carry. And, you know, he really didn't, you know, there were no real instances of him being big boyed by the Eagles in a way that you could probably say, you know, Pepe was, where with some of those screens where he was kind of tossed aside, you know, ragdolled. And I think that's the big concern for me, you know, is someone as small as Ardarius Washington, you know, the reason he probably didn't get drafted in the first place was because of those size concerns. So can he do the thing where, you know, that the size is just not really effective for him in terms of his play style? Can he make the hits that he's supposed to? Can he, you know, take on the blocks that he's supposed to without getting just totally destroyed? And I think he did a pretty good job with that on Friday night.
So this falls into an old Bill James thing that he used to talk about, is because someone is weird, sometimes you assume they're smart, you know, kind of thing. So with Ardarius, you know, he's a small guy, so you worry about the tackling. And I think it's a very legitimate concern. I'm totally with you there with it. I'm not 100% sold on the whole instincts thing. I'm hoping he's there. I'm hoping the last few days of camp, this day of against the Eagles looks really good. I do kind of fear that it was very modest talent that he was facing. Kenny Pickett actually is a pretty good caliber of preseason quarterback to face. You know, McKee at this point probably is a little bit lower. Maybe the combination of them is not too shabby, relatively speaking, but I thought Wiggins was not really tested in terms of them forcing trail coverage out of him that would get him into trouble. They allowed him more, for example, to come over the top for PDs, use the boundary very effectively, and most of his action was on that right sideline where he had his PDs. He had one that even wasn't called a PD. I was out of bounds, but he was contesting the guy towards the sideline, and then three others that were basically right on that right sideline.
If the I don't want to, you know, be the cold shower for any of the Nate Wiggins hype, because we should applaud, you know, talented players doing talented things, and he definitely did that on a Friday night. But, you know, occasionally dipping in on Eagles coverage because there's so many good writers and reporters on that beat. I think the drumbeat from Eagles training camp has been, you know, are we sure that Philly actually has a legit wide receiver 3 on this roster? And you look at who these guys were going up against, you know, John Ross has been around the block a couple times, probably faster than most people, but that doesn't really have a whole lot of production to show for it. Johnny Wilson's obviously, you know, a pretty intriguing prospect athletically, but I think he lasted until day 3. You know, Joseph Nada, I think was another guy that
he was in the game last year. So might say it all in the second half.
he was another guy, I believe, that was targeted when Nate Wiggins was in coverage. So, you know, these are the guys that Nate Wiggins should be, I think, having the upper hand on athletically and then instinctively and, you know, every other kind of adverb you want to throw out there. But I just want to kind of pump the brakes and saying that this is a, you know, a kind of king making performance, because maybe none of these guys that were even in the game in the first half could be on the Eagles roster by the time the roster cuts are made.
You can only play the guys in front of you, like the Ravens. The 2023 Ravens could only play the teams in front of them and be so good relative to them. I'm looking at who Wiggins played, and I don't care who they were, even if they were less than talented players. Wiggins didn't allow himself to be boxed out on plays, came over the top very impressively for a PD. I think it doesn't end up being anything less than two pluses for me, just in the way,
sure.
You know, so if it was up against you know, all UDFA receivers say. I wouldn't have thought any less of it than that. But anyway, let's keep moving on. Second half in so we talked about Pepe Williams, who had a big game, by the way. We'll get to him in the second part of the show. Started off at slot corner. Then they came in with a new crew with Kadar Holman, who has that interesting story, very similar to Quinyon Mitchell this year in terms of his origin from Toledo, similar high-end speed coming out in the draft, and he's done nothing with it in 5 years. Basically, he's hardly gotten on the field. Christian Mathieu came in at right cornerback. That's a big step down from really anyone else the Ravens can put out there. And then Worley came in to play a combination of nickel and safety, which is interesting because he was almost like simulating the role of Hamilton coming in and playing up in the slot on some plays and deep as the on the half field strong safety side on others. I thought that was an interesting twist. I wonder if they were trying to really simulate the presence of Hamilton and what they'd have to do call wise to make those changes.
Yeah, I wish we'd gotten clarity on who wore the green dot after Trenton Simpson left, because I think that would have been illuminating. Maybe it was Josh Rosk, given his familiarity with the system and his central role.
He was out of the game then too. So it was either, it would have been one of the inside linebackers.
Yeah, you're right.
It would have been Jennings or Rigby. Probably Jennings.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, probably not Rigby because he's barely practiced. Yeah, I mean, like I'm always a Darryl Worley fan, just as a player and as a human being, just a very good dude. You know, I don't think he made your three stars, but he did have the breakup of the RPO early in that third quarter. That was mm-hmm. that was impressive. I think he was involved in a couple of the run fits. You know, obviously it was kind of surprising to me that he was still available in free agency for as long as he was. I know obviously the injury concerns were probably an issue with him around the league, but you know, he's, I think, beloved in the Ravens locker room. And I probably say it's a long shot, not a long shot, but like a, he's probably on the outside looking in right now for that 53, considering, you know, Ardarius's ascension and Eddie Jackson's arrival. But if the Ravens can stash him on the practice squad, I think that would be a great guy to have in your back pocket as the season goes forward and guys get hurt and you need, you know, reliable guys to take their place at some point.
I would bet heavily that he'll be on the, you know, they have done this with other players like Levine, where they've waited more than 1 week. They've waited into the second week to bring them back to the roster. And that does give them some extra flexibility on salary. I think with Worley, he's 100% sure to be cut because of his handshake value. So they extend the roster by two players by cutting him and Urban, which is just, it's almost like a given at this point. You don't even have to guess. I hate to give this trick away to every person who's making, you know, in the Ravens roster pool this year. But if you don't have Worley and Urban cut, you're probably making a mistake in what you're doing, because those guys will be back week one, but that's not what they judge the roster contest on. And, or they might be. But I think Worley, you know, part of what he gives the Ravens is this roster extension versatility. And then they've already working, and unfortunately they have Mallett in their back pocket as a midseason replacement, other players like Keaton Mitchell. I don't know how it's going to end up with Adisa Isaac, but he might end up being a midseason replacement at this point in terms of when he's really ready to go. He's back at camp. He's practicing. That's a good thing. Before I go stray too far from the injury thing, any news on David Ajabo? Is that a new injury or is it the old injury he's not medically cleared for when he's practicing already?
Yeah, I don't have anything new on that. It was pretty strange that there would be a kind of stratification of clearance from doctors when you can play, you can get the green light to play in padded practices and yep. multiple padded practices day after day, but not have the green light to play in a, you know, obviously full contact NFL game. You know, I think I have probably been a little bit cynical in saying, like, in suggesting that this was maybe a good PR move for David Ajabo, because I don't want to speak for you, Ken, but I feel like the early returns on him in camp have been a little bit underwhelming, and throwing him out there when he probably isn't full strength or having all the rust knocked off. And, you know, we can have a separate discussion on if the, you know, when the rust will ever be fully knocked off this year and what that will look like for David Ajabo. But I think it probably would have been a steady drumbeat of, you know, this is the guy we took in the second round. This is the, you know, the guy that we're trusting to replace, you know, Jadeveon Clowney and all these guys in the aggregate. So, you know, hopefully we get a look at him next Saturday. If not, then hopefully we get a look at him in the finale against the Packers. Because if you don't feel like he's cleared to, you know, compete in an NFL preseason game, then I don't know how you can feel good about his readiness for week one against a, mm-hmm. you know, a Chiefs team that prides itself on its physicality and just how hard they go in their training camp.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly with you on that. Let's talk. Last corner come in was Bump Cooper, who played quite well. I thought he came in, played a fair amount of slot corner. I'm not 100% sure he didn't get a snap or two on the outside because he was deep in coverage in the end zone on one PD. You know, he's been a guy who's had his moments in camp, but not a guy you think, boy, this guy might make the roster. I'm really excited about the Ravens' depth at corner right now. And the performances of really Cooper, Williams, Washington, and even Holman to a degree are things that give me hope that they've got more of a stacked roster than even to fill a top five.
Yeah, and you know, I'm hoping, and I believe you noted in your grades on your website that TJ Tampa was up and running at the end of camp,
yeah,
or at the end of practice last week, and that typically forebodes a return to practice. Obviously, I think it would be unrealistic to expect him to be up and running and good to go for the preseason game if he just has 5 days of practice underneath him. You know, obviously, sports hernias were a serious enough setback for Charlie Kohler in his rookie year that he didn't really do anything. I think that preseason, I forget exactly when he came back, but that was obviously a talking point early on for the injury picture that season. So the you know, if Nate Wiggins is back and TJ Tampa is playable, then
didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We should have some fun matchups on the outside, especially for that Green Bay game, considering just how many, you know, good, not great wide receivers they have on that roster. I think that could be a really, really fun, you know, audition, or a really, really fun rehearsal for the Chiefs and just the kind of receiving talent that they have themselves and the play calling and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be a good test for certain. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about safety and the depth we saw there. Ardarius Washington, Eddie Jackson got the start. Eddie Jackson left early. Washington played a long time in this game. They replaced Washington played what? He played about a half in this game. Let me go through this here. Yeah, he played all of the first half, and then I thought he might have come back in the second half, but it does not appear that he did. He played all the first half. That was it. And then they went to their next string, Kane and Worley. Kane was in for a while, finished his night with that helmet-to-helmet hit, which actually sent him out of the game, that's very unusual, by the way. The helmet-to-helmet deliverer rarely takes the worst of that burden. I'm not saying it's never happened, but I just, you don't see it very often.
Sorry, again, I was zoned out for a second. Apparently, Hollywood Brown suffered what Ari Meyerov called a sternoclavicular joint dislocation against the Jaguars, and he's in the hospital. Andy Reid compared it to Tyreek's shoulder injury from 2019, which caused him to miss four games. So that's potentially a week one absence if we do the math and graft a 4 week absence for Hollywood onto you know his timetable for coming back.
Okay, I guess you hope for the best for Hollywood starting in week two. There we go.
it might be a little bit of karma for the Ravens, because I think we all probably expected that Rashee Rice would have been suspended for week one, but obviously the NFL is kind of waiting until the legal process is sorts itself then before they make the decision on just how long to suspend him. So if the Chiefs are missing one of their starting wide receivers, it's probably not going to be the one we expected, but I'm sure Zach Orr isn't complaining either way.
It's one of those things where if you remember back to the Saints and Bounty Gate, that they staggered the suspensions because of competitive concerns. And I don't know if they would do that for the Chiefs to put Rashee Rice out at a different time. Look, we've already lost Marquise Brown. Can't you let us have Rashee Rice until week three and then start the suspension then, kind of thing? I don't know if they do that or not. And now that seems to be its own competitive concern, the ability to appeal when you want to take your suspension. I know there's always been things like that in baseball. You appeal it, you automatically appeal it, and then you say, oh no, I rethought about it. And after, you know, you face the three straight left-handers with your big right-handed bat, then he accepts his suspension, for example.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, some folks in the NFL punditry have said that if the justice isn't meted out by law enforcement for Rashee Rice by the middle of the season, then it's probably unlikely that he gets a suspension, during the 2024 season, because I don't think Roger Goodell wants to, I don't know what he wants to do, but I think it's unlikely that Roger Goodell would suspend someone, you know, for the playoffs, right? For something that happened way back during the summer. I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into Roger Goodell's mind, but I feel like that would be a kind of thing where the Chiefs and the NFL negotiate something where, you know, it's best for all parties involved if this really important player of this really important offense is not missing for the most important part of the schedule. But that could just be everyone being cynical about the NFL and how it kind of operates.
Yeah. There might be something there. There is a pattern of having done things like this before with competitive concerns in mind. In your case, you're really talking about more like keeping a strong franchise strong, which I really hate that. I really hate that for the right. sake of, you know, you can't do that to the Yankees kind of thing. But let's go through that. I really want to talk about the deployment order and finish up with that.
Sure.
Bo Brade came in. He was the last safety to see action. I thought he had a very good game. We'll talk about him a little bit in the thing. But the order of Kane, then Brade, giving a little bit of insight into the depth chart was a little bit interesting. It wasn't obvious, I don't think, from camp. As soon as Kane has had some plays in recent, you know, over the course of, I'd say, the last week or so, that have looked pretty good there, but he looked fine in the game. A couple of good plays on special teams, and all but the penalty, really, honestly, good plays in this one.
Yeah. I think there was one play where he kind of got moved out of his gap on a run play in the third quarter, but he had the pass defense, I think, on a check down in that same quarter. And he definitely lowered his helmet on that big hit in the red zone. It's tough to say that he had anything hard done against him, because that definitely to me looked like an illegal hit. But it's been good to see him, and like you mentioned, Bo Brade kind of finally emerging a little bit from anonymity to make some waves in training camp and in the preseason, after a lot of people were kind of wondering which of those guys was going to be potentially like the dark horse third safety after they signed him, after they drafted him, considering, you know, at that point no one had really a clue who was going to be the Geno Stone replacement on this team.
Yeah, lots of good choices to make, and I think the Ravens may have a trade in their future, if not two, involving the defensive backfield. If you look forward to the end of camp, you always have a lot of teams who need corners, and if the Ravens' depth holds up there, pretty good chance. The Ravens, I wish they'll stash away as much as they can of that, but they'll do what they'll do. Outside linebacker, let's talk about that. Harrison and Robinson started the game. Robinson stayed in, played a fair amount with Evans. Harrison checked out after two series, I think it was. Yep, two series, and left it to really Evans, Robinson, and Ravenel. Ravenel playing a ton of that open outside linebacker job. We talk about how these players played, but there's nothing surprising in the order of deployment at those positions.
No. I mean, was Joe Evans on the field basically like midway through the first quarter? I mean, yeah.
I'll tell you exactly when he entered. He entered on the second drive. He entered, and he was then there at the end of the game as well. And he almost played every snap from then on. He had a few snaps. He was out of there, but it wasn't much.
Yeah, I thought we would see more Malik Harrison, honestly. I personally love watching Malik Harrison. I think he's such an awesome player, and that the Ravens were able to bring him back, I think was such a win for the kind of style of play that they want to have. And you think about just how useful he was in games, like the win over the 49ers, where you could put him in as part of that base personnel. And obviously he's not going to offer a huge amount as a edge rusher, but as an edge setter, I think he's just a tremendous guy. And we've seen him pick off Josh Johnson in practice, and just do I've seen him bully past Roger Rosengarten in one-on-one pass rushing drills. So I'm always really impressed, and it's always a thrill to kind of watch him just beat people up on the outside. And I think it's probably a good sign for him that the Ravens so value his contributions to this team that he was basically out after what, one, two, three series. I mean, he did not go for long in this game.
Yeah, two series. They were long drives, but two series. the other thing, I was a little surprised we didn't see Harrison play a little Mike. Also, I thought they might do that.
That's true.
Looking forward to the season and who the Ravens have to replace Roquan if anything happens to him. And that's the big fear, I would say, is they don't really have an easy replacement. I think it would be Harrison first. I think the second guy might be Rigby. Now, he'd be on the practice squad if he's with the Ravens at all, when it happens. And the Ravens might be at a point where they go to the street anyway, because that inside linebacker size and shape pool is very large. There are a lot of guys out there who can come in and bring veteran savvy to your team. It's about the time of year you pick up the phone. You say, wait a minute, what's Josh Bynes' number again? And you call him up to bail out your defense. Anyway, let's move on. Talk about the inside linebacker since we started that. Simpson played an incredible amount in this game for relative to what I expected. He wasn't replaced until the fourth quarter when Rigby came in to for the last 21 snaps. Board got the Harrison treatment. He was only in there for one series. That was a long one, but he also rotated in that series with Josh Ross. So they were Simpson was in there every play, but Josh Ross and Harrison were not alternating exactly, but they were rotating based on circumstance.
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of notes on Chris Board, certainly not to the extent that you did. I think the one thing that he did that caught my eye was something he did in a bad way, where a missed tackle on the first drive that led to a nice gain for the Eagles. But, I forgot to jot this down as part of the defensive notes because it was special teams play, but I think on one of the early kickoffs, he just demolished a guy who was trying to block him. And I think those might've been like the first or second, or probably would have been the second or third kickoff for Tucker, because obviously the first one was not returned. So, he knows where his bread is buttered, and to see him just, take it to an Eagles player who probably did not expect to get lit up like he was by Chris Board was fun to see. So obviously, the Ravens are probably in trouble if they're relying on Chris Board to be a every down contributor on defense. But, his value in special teams for at least this night was very much apparent.
Board was replaced by Ross, who played the bulk of the game. And Ross, he probably, a lot of people, the way they saw it, I don't think really blamed Ross for the touchdown I don't really blame Ross for it either. The Shipley touchdown on the little swing pass right to the right in the flat. That's Ross's play all the way. And what made that play was the tight end Calcaterra, Grant Calcaterra, I think it is, ran straight down the field and effectively laid his shoulder out in front of Ross. So Ross was immediately caught in the wash, and he was trying to get over there. He's trying like hell to get over there. Probably was a little bit late, but that was the play right there. It wasn't Wiggins' job. The camera immediately went to Wiggins. Like, what the hell are you doing? You know, why aren't you in position to make that play? But Wiggins actually had Calcaterra's coverage on that play, and that's why he hadn't jumped off it and gone to anywhere else. And Ardarius Washington.
Even the stadium camera went to Wiggins, I think, and it captured him saying crap. So that led me to believe that he was the one who effed up. But after reading your notes and going back and watching the All-22, it's definitely apparent that, you know, it is Ross who is basically lined up opposite. Who was it who caught the touchdown? Was it
Shipley?
And as you said, just did not have the right angle because of that incidental screen to get to him. And, you know, Wiggins was definitely not to blame on that one. If I'm reading the route progression correctly.
Right. Yeah. I think you are. The only other guy would be Washington. I think Washington had the quarterback containment on that side. And also would be any other route you run through there. Cause you can run Shipley as a clear out and then you can bring somebody all across. Also, you still want to have somebody there. Washington was late getting over. Woodson kind of made, you know, he did identify the possibilities that Ross might have been the guy, that a linebacker was supposed to cover him. Simpson was actually rushing the quarterback on the other side. That leaves him out of the responsibility calculus. But Ross was deep enough. He was in the right spot. In the right place to be responsible for that coverage at the start of the play. He did not react quickly enough. And then he got leveled. So unfortunate, but anyway, it's that much more unfortunate that Wiggins's near perfect night it gets this tag on it as well, where he gave up a touchdown pass. It didn't look that good.
Right.
All right, defensive line. Jones, Washington, Irvin. We talked about this a little bit later, but Tupou was a 7-year veteran. Sanat, similar lineage, 6-7-year veteran. I forget how long he's been in the league. And then two rookies, Walther, who's a really undersized 5-tech, weighs about 280, and Ravenel, who's 6'5", 292, is perfect-sized 5-tech, were in there playing all the snaps. Those four guys had to share everything for the last pretty much forever of the game after about the third drive. Well, actually, Washington played on the fifth drive also. So it was after that. It was them all the rest of the way.
Yeah, I've liked Ravenel. I think he was a guy who John Harbaugh's been high on among the undrafted rookies. And, you know, I wrote about him a little bit because I did this story that came out just before kickoff on Friday on Kadir Ismail, who's obviously is Kadri Ismail's son. And just kind of following along Kadri for Tuesday's practice and, you know, just kind of getting his take on everything as he watches his son try to realize his NFL dream. And obviously, Kadir is not exactly bulked up like a Nick Boyle or a Josh Oliver. So that inline blocking, that condensed blocking can be a bit of a struggle for him. And one of the low points for him in that Tuesday practice, which did have some nice highs, was, you know, him trying to set the edge against Ravenel. And I think Ravenel just swims by him easily and, you know, gets into the backfield just extremely, extremely comfortably. And I think he's done some nice things in camp. I don't know how realistic it is to say he has a shot at making this 53-man roster, but if the Ravens can stash him on the practice squad and, you know, develop him and keep him healthy, then, you know, they're getting some guys on this defensive line who are still good, but getting up there in age. And if you can find a guy like that who, you know, has the frame and the instincts and just the desire to get better, then I think he could be potentially, you know, a contributor to this defense in a year or two's time.
That's a guy, by the way, who could be Brent Urban's replacement in the future. I mean, he's a 5-tech, right. 5-tech, you know, they're similar in a lot of ways in terms of body type. Ravenel's a little thicker, but he's certainly a guy who can play an open front you know, play the edge as a what is essentially a five tech and not a, a defensive end or a or an outside linebacker normally. And he, you know, the Ravens obviously they gave him a long trial at that on Friday night, and I thought he looked pretty darn good in that role. My notes are out there if you want to read them in the article, by the way, as well. Let's go on and like do a little bit of comparing and contrasting as we go, because they didn't have, we didn't have all the players obviously on the field, and that's part of it. And some groups without their top players are drastically degraded. Other groups maybe less so. Okay, but the safety and cornerback groups, you know, being without those top four players and still getting this quality of play, I thought was remarkable, proved remarkable depth.
Yeah. And I again, probably has a little bit to do with the Eagles' quality at wide receiver. But I think the fact that the Ravens were able to play as much single eye looks as they were, probably tells you everything you need to know about how confident they felt in some of these guys matching up in coverage on an island with these Eagles receivers. So really impressive to see them do that. You know, to see Zach Orr call a couple exotic blitzes. And can remind me if we haven't by the end of this podcast to bring up a diabolical blitz or the diabolical blitz by that got Pepe the sack, because
that was amazing.
Washington on that.
We can talk about
our,
it.
Our dears. Talk about it now or talk
sure, about it that's fine. Sure, that's fine. It's a team concept.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously the star of that play is Pepe Williams because he gets the sack, but he's an unblocked pressure. So, you know, you kind of pat his head and say, you know, good job for doing your job, because it wasn't that exceptional. But what was exceptional in terms of just like how Zach Orr dialed it up was he has Ardarius Washington basically like lined up in the wide nine spot, you know, threatening to blitz in the same way that you would have expected like Kyle Hamilton to line up at times last year. And then after the snap on the other side, you know, Pepe comes from his slot position, but Ardarius doesn't just retreat into a shallow zone. He goes all the way back. And like this is a fire zone. So six players dropping into coverage against like, you know, four or five Eagles receivers. Ardarius hauls ass and goes all the way back to deep center field. It's just like, what are you doing, Zach Orr? And obviously it worked, but it was just so bizarre. I couldn't even kind of tell if it was like a two deep or, you know, a two under four deep or a three deep, three under kind of fire zone, because all the guys were kind of jumbled, you know, matching up with however the routes were distributing. But it was just so bizarre to see Ardarius go from being one of the guys closest to the quarterback at the start of the play to literally, you know, the Marcus Williams, Ed Reed type spot as the center field cover guy. He just goes to a full sprint as soon as that ball is snapped. It's like, holy shit, I gotta be somewhere right now. And it was just, it's so fun to watch.
The good news is there wasn't anything that could develop in that amount of time, but Ardarius was back probably to make a tackle there rather than a play on the football. Okay, so if the ball is dumped off short somewhere, the first line of defense is broken, Ardarius is back to make a tackle, not a play on a pass, let's put it that way. But the blitz itself was I saw more complexity to it than that, because it was both Evans and Washington lined up on the, you know, 7 and 9 basically on that offensive right side opposite the right tackle,
right?
And they both dropped a cover, and from that left side, B gap and C gap effectively, both B gap is really what it ended up being, came Ross, who got picked up, mm-hmm, because there's one guy to pick up two people, and Ardarius, right, who flew by him outside, and I sorry, not Ardarius, it's Pepe, who Pepe flew by him outside and made the sack. But just it was extremely well designed in terms of, you know, what do you have there. And, you know, if last year McDonald and Orr certainly was a part of it, was willing to drop Matabike and Pierce to cover on a number of plays, then you can
yep,
justify pretty much anything at that point in terms of you do. And there have been that's done a lot in the NFL. It's not really that surprising to drop linemen off the edge and, right, and try and maintain your numeric advantage on the outside of an offensive formation.
Yeah, I guess this was it Mike McDonald or was it Wink? But I will never forget. I think it probably would have to have been Wink, but like
the Rams game,
Calais Campbell, after having like maybe 8 total reps in pass coverage over his entire NFL career, comes to Baltimore, plays for Wink Martindale, and I think in that first game against Cleveland, I believe it was, drops into coverage like 4 times. So
on one of the earliest plays of that game, it might have been the 3rd or 4th play of the entire game, he dropped the coverage, tipped the passing coverage, and he goes, crap, I should have had it kind of thing. He's banging his fist on the ground, and Marlon Humphrey behind him got the interception.
That's right. Yeah,
that was one of those plays.
It just goes to show just how much of a continuum the Ravens defensive coordinator evolution is, you know. And I guess why you really, you know, Mike McDonald was a genius. Love talking to him. Love watching him play. But so much of what he learned is also what I think we could expect Zach Orr to have learned from being in that room, being around a lot of really smart defensive play callers.
It's great that the Ravens can continue that DNA, and you need a continuously coached and run organization. It really requires a Harbaugh, requires good, you know, consistent GMing, which the Ravens obviously have always had. We're so lucky. But, you know, they maintained a lot of the concepts of the Roman years in their run game while bringing Todd Monken in. So it goes on both sides of the ball, I think. And honestly, this is the first time with Monken that they've really had success bringing in an offensive coordinator that took the concepts of the previous offensive coordinator. They've had a tremendous continuity of defensive coordinators. Their offensive coordinators all want to do it their own way. You know, you go from Kubiak to Trestman to, you know, Caldwell, and changes year after year, and to Cameron, and they all want to do it differently. They all want to do it their way, and are basically shut up and let me run my offense, guys. And fortunately now in Monken, I think they've got a guy who says, yeah, I buy into that. Let's keep that and let's layer on this.
How much did the passing game change from 2018 to 2019 when G-Row got the bump and Marty got the boot?
Well, a lot, because you're talking about Flacco and rookie Lamar, who only really ran the ball and didn't have his accuracy, right, to, you know, seasoned Lamar, 36-6, MVP. So I, you know, a lot from that perspective. But you know, there were things they did in 2019 that they had never done before. Let's put it that way. In terms of some of the RPOs that they ran in the very first game of that year, going all the way into the mesh point, pulling it out and throwing a pass. The 80-yard touchdown pass to Brown, for example, that's something we'd never seen before. You know, it'd been all under the previous coordinators. One of the common threads had been that zone block left, naked boot right play that they just ran ad infinitum with Flacco, and it was fairly successful. And then what they found was with Lamar, for example, that there's too much focus on Lamar to make that be successful. They're always watching out for the boot, so you can't boot as effectively nakedly. I think if you're talking about what year did the Ravens offense ever change by the most, it might be between 2018 and 2019. You might be able to find another time too, but that's a pretty big one. All right. Let's talk about, I did want to get on the tackling, by the way. Really good tackling night for the Ravens. And you see it in the fact that they didn't really allow any long plays in the game. No pass play over 11 yards. We talked about the secondary a little bit, but I don't think we gave the exact stats. The Eagles dropped back to pass 40 times in this ball game. They actually got 38 passes off. They averaged 2.8 yards per pass play. That includes the sacks, which is ridiculously low. I mean, you almost never get that in an NFL game, and especially in a loss. I mean, how often does something like that happen? They did not allow a single pass play over 11 yards the entire game. So it's very much like the runs that they didn't allow any long plays. And yet, how the hell do you lose this game? Pretty much the only way you could. You don't get turnovers and they drive down the field with you with a bunch of 4-yard plays.
Yeah, I'm sure I missed a couple in my notes, but I only had 2 missed tackles that I was jotting down for these player by player descriptions. That it was the I believe it was, what was it? I think one of them was the Josh or the Chris Board missed tackle in that first drive that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then I also had Bo Braid missing a tackle in the hole that I don't think ended up being super consequential. I think it was like a, you know, chance for a 1 yard gain that ended up being a 4 or 5 yard gain. So the Ravens did a pretty good job of cleaning up each other's mess when they messed up, but they didn't really mess up a whole lot, like you said, when they got their arms around dudes.
Yeah. And it's I like to go with a consistent number, and I don't always agree with the definitions used, but I will say this: the PFF is consistent in how they apply missed tackle, their missed tackle methodology. They had the Ravens for 7 missed tackles and 87 total attempts. I think it was 55 tackles, 25 assists, and 7 misses. So 7 out of 87, that's only an 8% missed tackle rate. That's very low. For a season, for a game, for any player, for any position, even a, you know, defensive lineman typically have rates over 8%, and they're the best at not missing tackles. You get into safety, I think the average is about 13%. At inside linebacker might be 11.5%. So really an outstanding game of not missing tackles, and I think that was a big part of the Eagles really didn't get any yak outside of their red yards. I know about half of their total passing yards were, the yak was equal to about half of their total passing yards, but a lot of that was red yards on balls behind the line of scrimmage that got advanced.
Yeah, maybe this is something that you or I should ask Harbaugh about, Ken, but do you recall them having the kind of weird miniaturized like tackling pylon last year that they've been using at training camp this year?
No, I don't remember it. So to describe this thing, it's a cylinder with 4 right. smaller grab bars on it that are vertical to the cylinder, but allow the player to latch on. I think it is in part a test of grip strength, but it's also a follow through. So they want the player, I think, to don't leave your feet until you've wrapped. And then once you're on the ground, continue to scramble and go forward. I think those are the elements of it as I'm describing it. That's true of the donut, by the way, also, that you don't leave your feet. You don't jump through the donut. You don't jump at the donut. You're allowed to leave your feet once you got your arms around the donut.
Yeah, I mean, you picked up on more details than I did. I just my eyes just kind of glaze over when I watch these guys do these tackling drills because they're so dull and repetitive. But I guess I hadn't even noticed the elements of grasp strength of grip strength. Might be something to do a story on either during training camp or during the season if they are a good tackling team. And tackling does matter. I think, you know, you listen to analysts like Mina Kimes talk about, you know, what made the New England Patriots so good last year as a defense was just like, that was a team that almost never missed tackles. And you think back to some of the Ravens teams that have struggled on defense over the years, especially probably during some of those more injury, you know, ransacked years. And it was, these guys just cannot tackle in space. And I think that's always something that we overlook when we talk about like PFF grades and 4-4-40s and blitz rate and this and that. And a lot of times it comes down to the basics of, can you drop a guy in space when he is, you know, a 1% athlete?
Yeah. All right, Jonas, always great talking football to you. We're going to come back for part 2 and talk about the individual players. But while you're here, why don't you tell people where they can find your work online and how they could contact you if they have a question about football?
TheBaltimoreBanner.com is where you find my work. I believe it's still $1 for 6 months. Obviously, that'll take you through the end of the season. And if you've got an email from me, I generally don't look at my Twitter mentions because I try to maintain my mental health. But if you want to shoot me an email, I believe it is jonas.schaefer@thebaltimorebanner.com.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you need to hit me up, DMs are always open at Film Study Ravens. I'm always interested in new people who want to do a new pod. Their time is more limited, but there is that gap between the last preseason game and the start of the regular season. If you have something you really want to talk about, I'd love to hear from you. Jonas, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.